Recording, please. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. It's Thursday, September 12th, 2024, and this is a collective bargaining session at the University of Central Florida. We've got the United Faculty of Florida team and the team representing the UCF Board of Trustees with us this afternoon. The first order of business that we usually have is to review the minutes from our last meeting, which in this case was on August 28th. Charlie, thank you for putting those up. And while those minutes are being displayed, just as the people noticed that items 9 and 10, there were two articles that we discussed at the last bargaining session, and we agreed that we were pretty close on them, and we've since then we signed those articles as they were presented at the meeting. So Claude, thank you very much for working with us to get this stuff done.
Okay, great. I think it looks good to me.
Looks good.
All right, hearing nothing to the
No
contrary, I'm
objections.
going to
Yep.
assume that we got those minutes taken care of. Thank you all very much for reviewing those. The first thing that we'd like to do today is respond a little bit on Article 23, the salaries article. On the 14th, Talat, your team had presented a counterproposal to us for Article 23, which we've reviewed. And there was also some information that you shared with us at our last meeting on the 28th, some data about student faculty ratios, salary packages at other institutions and so forth. And we're very grateful that you shared that information with us. All of that was shared with the provost and some of the other leaders at the institution. So everybody had the benefit of seeing that. And I thank you for gathering that information for us. One of the questions that was posed to me the last time we got together is what happened with the new monies that the university got? And I met with the provost and talked to him about that. The university received $35 million in new recurring funding. When the university requested additional recurring funding from the state, the primary purpose for that funding was to invest in engineering and technology programs at the institution. And we did receive $35 million of recurring money. $15 million of those recurring dollars are going for the salary package for all employees. That's the faculty, that's the non-unit employees as well. $20 million of that $35 million that was received is being invested in specifically in the engineering and technology programs for additional faculty hires, additional support personnel in those fields, staff members, and GTAs, for example. So that's where the money was used. We spoke to the provost. I spoke to the provost about the interest that the union has, that I think we all have, in providing a larger salary increase to the faculty. And at this time, we don't have the recurring dollars that we can do that. So I'm going to ask Charlie to put up Article 23. We have made some changes to Article 23, and I want to show what's
I don't distinguish between the two yet.
What those are. The changes really are with the payments, the one-time payment, and the salary increase. Because of where we are on the calendar right now, and Talat, you had kind of raised this question recently at one of our sessions. As time passes, the dates that we target for implementing and paying out raises and one-time payments has to move as we get closer to it. We have to have enough time in here in order to ratify an agreement, and also to have the folks that take care of payroll get everything queued up, ready to go to implement. And as it turns out, because of the insurance premiums that we pay out of each of our paychecks, when we implement an increase, when we pay out an increase, we want to pay it out on the first pay period of a month. So, and then whatever that first pay date is in a month, we go back 3 weeks, and that's when it's implemented. So we've had to change the implementation date for the raises that we're proposing and the one-time payments to November 22nd. And then the payout would occur on December 13th. So just because of the way the pay periods fall and the first payment in a month shows up, in order to do this in December rather than November, it actually makes a six week difference. So it covers three pay periods. That's just how it is because of the way the calendar falls. So what we've proposed to do here is simply change the implementation dates, change the payout dates by 6 weeks, which is three pay periods in this case. As a consequence, and Talat, this was something else that you had raised with us before, we're proposing to increase the one-time payments by $390 per employee, assuming we're able to do this payout, implemented on November 22nd and paid out on December 13th. That's $130 per pay period per employee.
So this is done with the calculation,
right?
The increase would have gone into effect in October.
The last number we used for this was 125. If we increase by 3%, which is what we're proposing to do here, that gets us close to $129, and we're calling it 130
mm-hmm.
Per pay period. So that's what we've got here on this part of the article. Charlie, can you show us that the same dates are used there for the merit increases, the November 22nd implementation, the December 13th payout? We also made one other change here. We had what we customarily do whenever a raise is implemented. The salary that's used as the benchmark is the salary the day before the raise is implemented. So if we implement raises on November 22nd, we want to look at the salary on November 21st and adjust the salary based on that November 21st salary. And originally we had a May date in there, which is, not what we want to do. There's a lot of things that would be harmful actually to the employees, some employees who may have increases between May 6th and whatever the implementation date turns out to be. We certainly hope it's November 22nd. There are some salary increases that would be missed and would not be figured into the calculation of the increase. So we want to make sure that we make that increase effective on the 22nd based on the salary on the 21st of November. And then Charlie, can you advance to the section on post-tenure review? Because we're looking at changing the implementation and payout dates for the one-time payments for everybody and the increases, we've moved the proposed payouts for the post-tenure review people who went through the process in the last academic year, in the 23-24 academic year, that those would be implemented now on December 20th and paid out on January 10th of 2025. So that's That's what we have done to update Article 23. I know there were some other things that your team asked for to lot, and they're just either they're not possible to do because we don't have the recurring funds to do them, or as we described before, there were some strategic decisions that the university has made with which we would like to implement here in Article 23, and that is to emphasize professional milestones and achievement, particularly by the tenure earning and tenured faculty. And that's why the promotion raises are suggested to be increased by 2% for the assistant to associate and associate to professor for those two raises. And then we also had one-time payments for the promotion or the excuse me, the post-tenure review people that we just showed you the dates on those. The funds to pay for the increased promotion raises and the one-time payments for the post-tenure review are made available by a reduction in the incentive awards. That's where the funding comes from. So I know we were asked to maintain the current level of incentive awards. We were asked to increase not only the assistant to associate and associate to professor promotion increases, but to increase them all by 2%. And rather than providing one-time payments to the people coming through post-tenure review, we wanted to make those, you suggest us we make those permanent increases to base. Those are we wish we could do those kinds of things. There's a significant cost associated with those.
Basically, Charlie, what you if we give up the incentive awards, you're basically not giving us any raise because those incentive awards are the ones that add $5,000 to the base salary of people, and so that's an increase that they get. What you're talking about is a one-time payment when you get post-tenure review. And this is something that we hope is going to go away once the legislature no longer desires that. That's an expectation on our part. I don't see why, something that we hope is temporary. This is how other, campuses in the Florida system are working. So, for example, if you look at the FSU CBA that they have just approved, the whole idea about post-tenure review, the first clause is that, this all that is being said about post-tenure review will just be removed should there be changes at the legislature level. And this is something that again, it's not in our hands because it depends on who's in the legislature. And but that's the assumption on which these more forward-looking universities are going, that this is not something, because if you're attacking tenure in Florida, and of course if UCF is the most compliant and wants to push forward with post-tenure review, then you are not making us competitive with other universities. And so the whole idea here is to protect tenure as an institution because of the virtues that we have seen. And this is something that is nationwide. And we are competing most of the time nationwide for faculty, for students, for grants, and so on. So I think, to talk about this post-tenure review, which we hope is a temporary, idiosyncrasy that is coming from the legislature, that we hope will go away, to be putting that and giving up what we've had. I mean, I don't see what progress we are making here. I mean, basically, you're telling us that we're going to be keep punishing you, and sort of making you work harder and harder, but without rewarding you. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to take the incentive awards, which is one of the few things going for UCF. To me, it doesn't make any sense. I think if Again, this is something that we will go into caucus and talk about it. So I'm not going to express my opinion any more than what I've already done. But I think it really makes no sense to not, to be giving us one of the lowest raises in the state and then taking away something that is good that is going here. So it's almost like saying, "Oh, we're giving you no raise. We gave you no raise last year. We'll give you no raise this year." That's basically what the provost is telling us, and there's
Well,
something is going to work to help build the morale in this place.
Todd, as I attempted certainly to explain last time, and I'll try again, the money that we're suggesting be diverted from the incentive awards is being used for other parts of the package that we're proposing. The recurring funds that are freed up from the incentive awards are going to the increased promotion raises for assistant to associate and associate to full. And then the
Okay.
one-time payments, the funds for the one-time payments are going to the post-tenure review people instead of to the incentive award. So it isn't anything's being taken away. I understand your point. I understand exactly what you're saying,
They
but
get
it's not being taken away. We're suggesting that it be spent in a different way.
well, you're taking something that adds to the base by one time. That's not the same. I mean, if you're taking that, then if
And
you.
we're adding more to the base at the time of promotion.
So, well, we'll have to. I mean, you're not doing anything more than what any of the other campuses do. I mean, we were the lowest, and that's why we asked that we be brought to be at par. I think, I mean, this is one of the most, within the Florida system, this is one of the ones that is making money. I mean, we even during COVID, we made money and we increased the number of students. That keeps going. So somehow, the money is being used for other purposes, but not for faculty who really are the ones who help make the place. And this makes no sense to me. To me, I don't know what the thinking is. And all I can say is that it doesn't make any sense. And it makes sense if you want us to be becoming a community college. It makes sense if you basically do want to give the message that we are really not going to be rewarding you. We want to make, get the most out of you without any reward. That's what makes sense. And then I guess my colleagues have to decide what they will do with that. But to me, it doesn't make any sense. It is absolutely, also considering what we are seeing at every other university in this system. I mean, that is where it is really remarkable that our administration, our president and our provost would be so blind to it. That is what, I don't know what's going on. So anyway, I'm not going to go on with it. I think we can have a, we can have, we can have a basically. Would we like to have a caucus on this, folks, or is that something that we should do? So,
I'm sorry, Chuck, are you
yeah.
finished with 23?
Those are the things that we were proposing to do for 23 is to
Okay,
add,
I will. All
change
right.
the dates. And again, Talat, I understand everything that you've said, and I have spoken both to the provost and the president, who both would like to be able to provide all employees with more than we're able to right now. What we've put out here is a salary package for the institution that totals about $35 million when we look at the n not just to the faculty but to everybody. Some of that is in one-time payments, but the
So,
portion that is going to salary increases is $15 million. That is money that has not been spent previously. It is new money that's being dedicated to the employees.
okay, you have already, for those who are not in the unit, you've already given them a one-time payment and a 3% increase, right? So, and they have not had to give back anything. All right. So in that calculation, if we in the in unit are going to be treated the same way as those outside the unit, then where what would it be? Why would status quo not be maintained on everything else? I mean, that's my simple question.
Well, again, what I have said is this is what we have proposed,
Okay.
how we would spend the new money, the $15 million of new recurring dollars, plus the existing money that we've rolling over from year to year, and how we were going to, how we were proposing to spend that money. Some of that included increased raises for some promotions. It also included one-time payments for people who had come through post-tenure review. Again, no money's being taken away. What's being proposed is
So
spending
what's
it differently. Now, you could refer to this as taking something away. What I suggest to you is, can you propose something to us that's the same money that maybe be spent a way that you think is better, and we can take that to the administration and see if that's acceptable. But
okay.
it's just a saying, you know, I understand you've looked very carefully at what other institutions are doing, and I thank you for again for sharing that information with us. But it's not feasible for us to say we're going to do everything good, everything that we like that another institution, we're just going to do it all here. We can't do that. There's a certain amount of money that we have, and we've proposed this is how we would like to use this money. So my question to you is, rather than just saying this is all the new stuff, more new stuff we want to have, how does the UFF suggest we deal with the money that we've got?
All right. And that's 15 million or something to that effect. So, I mean, we know the number of people and we know what the these are. So however
The
that
15 million is new money. The money that was moved around is $300,000 in one-time funds and $300,000 in recurring funds that had come from 60 of the incentive awards.
Chuck, did I hear you
That,
correctly? The 15 million was for all employees, not simply for the faculty, correct?
yes, that's correct. Yes. Thank you for that correction, Charlie.
So, right. So actually, what do we should we take a break right now, or should we, you know, I mean, we could take a break, and I don't think we'll resolve the issue, but it would be a good, since you know, several colleagues are here, it would be good to at least get their feedback on this. So maybe we take a quick break. It doesn't that doesn't mean that we're going to come with a finite, even with a firm solution right now, but at least it gives everybody an opportunity to let us know where we're
About
going.
how much time would you like?
10 minutes.
All right, so let's plan to get together again at 1:40.
Yeah, that would be fine.
Hello, Charlie.
Yes, ma'am. Hello there.
Hi.
I can't hear you. I can't hear you. I can't hear you. I'm sorry. Dr. Dennis?
Yes, ma'am.
There you are. There is a breaking.
I'm sorry. Do
I'm
you mind?
so disgusted. You're checking out at 2
Sorry,
o'clock.
there's a breakout room open.
I don't know how to get into it. Do you mind adding me, please?
I'm trying to think if I can. Let me see if I can. I will try, okay? All
Thank you so much.
right, take care.
Bye. Thank you.
I guess now we're back. We're recording again.
Yeah, I may not have turned off the recording. I clicked the button, but it may not have turned off, but it's fine.
It's okay. It's recording now. Okay. Yeah, we're back. And check, there's one more piece of information that we need, which is, let's see. People are still in breakout room, I guess.
I closed the breakout room, so.
Oh, they will close in 40.
Yeah, 45 seconds left. It'll okay.
Well, those are people who probably walked away from their computers, and so.
Okay. All right. So, one piece of information, you did tell us that this year that was 35 million for the, what we're talking about, 24, 25 raised. It was 35 million new money, of which 15 million was used for raises, and 20 million went to College of Engineering and Technology.
It went to efforts in engineering and sure. technology that sure. extend and, beyond
right beyond college. Beyond College of Engineering. Yeah, no, I agree. And so that's one thing. The other is last year when the funds were used to hire advisors, what was the new money that came to UCF last year for the period 23-24 when we did not get any raise? What was the amount that came that year? Because there were new funds sent, and I think UCF got more than UCF and FIU, I think, got more than the others. But anyway, we'd like to know what new funds came last year.
All right, I will see what information I can get forth.
Okay, because I think it came out somewhere in, I think it was announced in, didn't the provost announce it in Senate or something? But we can get the information, but if you get it, that would be fine. I think the provost announced it in one of the Senate meetings.
I'm sure I can get it. I know who I'm.
Okay, all right. And then also an accounting of what was used for advisors, because if that amount is also like 30 million, then I am hard pressed to see how 30 million was spent in hiring advisors. That would hire a lot of advisors if you had 30 million of recurring money. But I don't know.
The news said the advisors cost 9 million.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that's true or not, but you can check that, right, Chuck?
I'll see what information I can get. Okay. I can't confirm anything
okay.
right now.
But please do give us about what was used with the new money, recurring money that came last year. And also you have given us the information for this year, and then we'll take it from there. Okay, that's fine. So we'll go with that, and then we'll come back. Our next meeting is on the 25th. Would you like to, because from what I understand, you would like to have the full book done before we agree on 23. Is that right?
Well, we have to, until we agree on 23, we don't have a full book. It's part of the full book. So okay. We've got to come to terms on everything and work.
Okay.
We would like to be able to get the money that's coming for the faculty to the faculty as soon as we can. So sure. Yes, we're trying to get this done.
So would we. And so what I was going to suggest is that we have a meeting planned for the 25th. Could we also have a meeting on the 18th?
I don't know. I don't know.
Because the reason I was going to ask that is that I think Article 10, and I know you have some more things to present, but let me just mention an idea that we have about Article 10, because Article 10 has two parts. Article 10 has what was there before, and then the PTR part, which is new. So the other part, which is from last year, I mean, from the last full book, that's the one where these changes that Charlie has made and you have made, and most of it is editorial from what I gather, right? Charlie, you're muted.
Sorry, just reorganization.
Reorganize. So what I was wondering was that if we could break that up into two parts, the discussion would go a lot easier. You know, and what I was wondering is if we could do that next on the 18th, whether we could just talk about Article 10. If you guys can swing that.
It may be possible. We may have to meet at a different time.
That's fine. That's fine.
That's fine.
But
exclusively Article 10.
Do you have a smaller group of people that you want to just focus on 10? Because then I can, you know, invite that core group to discuss.
Yeah. It shouldn't be a problem. I think we really need to have that meeting, and if we could do that on the 18th, I think that would be a big help.
I'm sorry, Charlie. Are you talking about doing it in person on the 18th? When you said a small group.
I can either way.
I'm trying to understand what you meant by small group.
Well, sometimes you have people on your team who are experts in, like, you know, sabbaticals or some other part. I thought if you had a group that was really interested in 10, I could go through and show all the reorganization parts and identify all the new parts so that you can think about them. I'm not bargaining. I just want to just show you where all those parts are. And I have the document, but Talat and I weren't able to connect, so I can drop it off.
So what I'm thinking is that if we had a, because I think what is in the rules is that there should be an open meeting, right? So open meeting. So first of all, Charlie, maybe you can check on the time and room availability, because it might be better to do it in person. But either way, you know.
I'll talk with Chuck after the meeting and we'll get back to you.
Yeah, why don't you get back? And if we can do it, then we can come to the meeting on the 25th with the you know, the difficult parts kind of behind us, I hope.
One would hope. Okay. Do you want to move on to the next article then? Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, Talat, we'll get back to you by the end of today about availability on the 18th. I think we may be able to do it, but it won't be at 1 o'clock.
Sure.
And it'll just be Article 10, obviously. So
And just Article 10.
So check 11 o'clock at night?
At your place, Robert.
Julie, come to my office. Come on.
Talat,
It'll probably be a little bit earlier than that, but
I was on the sabbatical.
I appreciate your willingness to be available whenever we can get together. Thank you, Robert.
Absolutely. More time I spend with you, Chuck, I think the happier I am. Right?
All right. Well,
I'm not going to get it. Yeah, this is all being recorded, by the way.
I have no problem being on the record, Talat. I have no problem.
Okay. Let's meet. With invitation to whoever wants to come, and then get work on 10.
Okay, and it'll just be Article 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Count me in on that, Talat. I'm available 2, 3, or 4 in the afternoon. I was on a sabbatical committee the last 4 years at the college level, so I can help.
Okay,
I can be there too, Talat.
Okay,
was that you, Yvonne? Okay.
Yeah, Giovanna.
All right. Got it.
Okay, Todd, the next thing that I mentioned that we would like to show you is another proposal from us on Article 16.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened, we've agreed to a lot of things in 16, and I think we've made some good improvements in 16 that are good for all of us. The last thing that we want to talk about is in section 16.7. And we are taking some language that you had suggested how the last sentence in 16.7 could be reworded. That's the blue. Mm-hmm. And then we've added some red.
Mm-hmm.
And what this says is cases in which the president or representative determines that employees' actions do not adversely affect the functioning of the university or jeopardize the safety or welfare of the employee, colleagues, or students, the employee shall be given 180 days notice.
Mm-hmm.
Along with that, so that's the 180 days, which we think is a better way to express
than 6 months.
Express what we're doing here. And then along with that, we're suggesting that we put in the payout option like we have in Article 12 for non-reappointments. And basically the university would have the option at any point during that 180-day notice period to pay the person out for the rest of the notice period, and the employment would end immediately. And where we think this makes sense, one of the things that we had mentioned to you before is whether it's 180 days or 6 months, that doesn't necessarily conform to the academic calendar. And it may be that because of the way the 6 months falls, somebody's termination ends up being in March, which means they can't teach anything in the spring. What we'd rather do is when we get to a point, say they've just as an example, a person that's given this notice in the fall, let's say, would finish the fall semester, but then could be paid out for the rest of the notice period at that point. So they would get all the salary associated with the 180 days. But things like the office space that might be needed for replacement hires or new hires would be available at the end of the term. So with this payout option, it would allow us to do things that I think make more sense and conform to the academic calendar and how we do things at the institution. But the notice for the people who are not adversely affecting the function of the university is it would be 180 days. And then there would be this option the university would have, just as it does in Article 12, at its discretion to pay somebody out for any portion of that's allowed by state law.
And so this is making it parallel to the non-reappointment.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
What you have here will make it parallel to what it is for non-reappointment.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Well, we'll certainly take a look at this, Chuck. Yeah.
Are there any questions about that, Tala?
I remember we went through this discussion last time when we were doing the non-reappointment, and I think that one we ironed it out. I was just thinking about it in this, because what we were initially saying that the choice has to be, it could be the individual's choice as well, not just the university's, right? If the university elects and, you know, the person has to agree. But we are talking about how many cases do we have, Chuck, where this would apply? I mean, you mentioned something about 2 to 3 a year, but I think you were thinking about non-reappointment. This we are talking about a tenure.
No, I'm talking about Article 16.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I understand. But in Article 16, what we are talking about is a tenured faculty member, right? Because this is not a non-tenured. This is a tenured faculty member who is being terminated for just cause, right?
It's for anyone. Anyone can be terminated for just cause.
Oh, I see.
A tenured person cannot be non-reappointed.
Oh, no. But this, just if you raise it a little bit, Charlie, just when you go. So we are, okay, I see. So it is not just tenured faculty that we're talking about here.
No, anyone can be terminated for just cause.
Anybody who can be terminated for just cause. And then if you're terminated for just cause, then people who are terminated for just cause fall in two categories. Those who are deemed harmful to the institution or whatever, and so that the university has the prerogative to terminate them right away. And then others who are not deemed harmful to the institution, and these are the people that we are talking about here. But this one, 16.7, is only about tenured. It's not about all.
No, it says a tenured appointment or any appointment of definite duration.
Okay. I see. So that's why you said the number was 3 to 4 a year. And out of those, how many of them are deemed, I don't know. This is so that they are jeopardizing the safety or welfare of the place.
Well, right now, I'm not going to mention any names, but
yeah,
there are two employees who are in the process of serving out their notice period.
I see. And they were given 6 months?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Okay, so no, I don't know. Does anybody else have questions on it? I don't have any question, actually. Anybody here? Robert, do you have any question? Are you taking a break, Robert? He's somewhere. Okay. I shouldn't have called him. Okay.
And Talat, as we've worked together on that article, and I really do think we've made some helpful changes in Article 16.
We have.
Regardless of what we end up doing
we have.
Right here. But I think what we've been able to do working together on Section 6.7, 16.7, and what we're now proposing also is 16.8.
Yeah.
We for people who are not a serious threat to the operations of the university or to employees, colleagues, whatever, they get the same notice period.
So
we're also able to make sure that if there is a case where somebody's just hanging around and not really able to be assigned to do anything of real significance, anything that can be evaluated, we have that option to just pay them out. So we're not taking any salary away from anybody. It's just a different way of getting that salary to them. They actually get it sooner. So I hope that it's clear that we think that from the institution's side, we want to take care of the employees. We're not taking anything away from an employee there, but we want to make sure that if there's somebody that it just doesn't make any sense to have them hang around a little bit while longer, we've got a way to address that and then make better use of things like the spaces that we have at the institution. So I think what we've done on 16 is potentially a win-win for.
So why don't we do this? We'll take a look at that. And if we, I'll consult with my colleagues. And if we agree, then I'll let you know so we don't have to wait till next time and we can TA it. Let's just see. My color coding is, I'm using that every day, getting as many green on my list as possible. Okay.
Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting
yeah,
there.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. We'd appreciate you looking at Article 16.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Of course. And we wanted to mention Article 20.
Right.
You had suggested something to us last time, which we have taken a look at. And we want to talk a little bit about that. And it may be possible for us to look at other articles, because we think 19 and 9 are related to 20 as well. We looked at this fact finder that you had suggested to us, and we looked at that. We shared it with the provost as well. And what we're struggling with, Talat, is understanding how this improves things, how this adds value to the grievance process.
So our the way we're looking at it right now, and that we do appreciate that you are actually keeping the provision of arbitration in there, and basically we're again saying that if Florida laws change, then we'll go back to it. So what we're talking about is when Florida laws do not allow for arbitration. And there, what we were struggling with is that if you do step one, step two, step three, you are basically, the decision is always being made by BOT or their representatives, and there is no neutral body that is saying anything. So if step two, of course, we are relying on the president's, essentially it's from the provost or the president's office. And then step three is back to the same office, essentially. So there's not a whole lot to be gained to go to step three, because it's a done deal. So why even have step three? That's what we're looking at, because
what we had proposed, because of the changes in state law, is that the grievance process, certainly for all personnel actions, we think there are some exceptions, and that's why we left the possibility that there may be arbitration in some cases. We left that in the article. But for most things that are personnel matters, it has to end at the president's level, which right now is step two. What the law would say is there is no step three, as we know step three. There's no arbitration step for those personnel matters for the faculty. So I'm not sure what you're calling step three.
So what we're talking, let's not even call it the step three. What we're saying is after step one, so if matters are resolved in step one, we're done, right? But after step, if that is not the case, then step two basically goes to the president. That's what it is right now.
Right.
And that's where the final decision will be, right? What would be good for everyone concerned, and hopefully even for the president, let's say, or his or her designee, if there were a document from a neutral body that kind of summarizes the case and say, here it is, okay? And so what that does is that in step two, then the president or designee can come on and basically say, hey, you know, this has been looked at, judged at from an independent person, and they're basically telling me to accept the step one decision, or they're telling me to go against the step one decision. And okay, I mean, it makes sense to me, I go with the person or not. It's just that people have gotten a little bit more of an independent evaluation and maybe more accepting of the decision. It probably, maybe dilutes the intensity with which people want to go to court and so on. Maybe it helps mediate some efforts. So it also spreads the decision a little bit. So I think those are the reasons why we think that it seems that the due process is there, whereas it doesn't otherwise. Robert. Robert is the boss here, you see. He's the history professor. What does a physics professor know about due process?
We should ask Provost Johnson about what the physics professor knows, right? So there's a couple things here, Chuck, and one really quick thing, because I want to respond to what you just said recently. The legislation doesn't say it has to stop at step three. We could go step 50 if we want, as long as the last step is in the hands of the provost and the president. So the idea that step three is the last is not true, right? So let's put that aside.
No, I agree.
Okay, so
it ends at the president.
We'll talk about going to step 50 later, right? Okay, so for right now, though, what I want you to think about, and what I would say to the provost if he were here, is that we are well aware of what's going on with this legislation. What's going on in this legislation is to make public sector employees in the state more like at-will employees. And so arbitration is a thing that we inherited from the union movement, from way, way back, has a right that brings in this third party process to disagreements so that workers and employers can feel like there is some voice in the process that is fair and objective. And I don't want to get into the philosophy of objectivity. Let's put that aside for a minute. So now what that all that has been stripped from the because of the legislature, right? So what we are asking is an acknowledgement and a return of some process that can be seen as a third party insight into what's going on. Obviously, it's not arbitration. It is not final. That's not what we're asking here. But we're saying, can a third party come in and provide some feedback in this process, which according to the legislation, if I can remind you, Chuck, is possible because it's not the final disposition, right? This is coming before the final disposition. And what I would say, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe our provost is a scientist, right? I would think the provost would be for more data, not less data, in making a decision, right? Jalat, you're a physicist, right? Would you rather have more data or less data? Can you answer that question?
Always more.
So we're trying to help the provost out here. And I would think, Chuck, you should go back and say the union wants to help you, Provost Johnson. They want to provide you with more data. And awesome. That more data comes in the form of this fact-finding process, gives you more data to make a decision. You're welcome. So we think the privilege should be thanking us for the fact-finding process, not saying this is unnecessary.
Well, again, we are struggling to see how this adds anything.
I just told you, Chuck, how it adds everything. Come on!
Okay,
listen to me?
I heard you.
Let me just say, so essentially, and this is what I've seen at other places, right? All of those places that I came from a non-union campus when I came here. So essentially, it's a neutral person who hopefully has no, really can look at it straight, looks at all the material together, listens to what has been talked about and says, okay, I think this is where you went wrong or the other person went wrong. And in my view, this is what how I would go about it. I think it makes, I just did it without being asked, right? I mean, there's something going on. I looked at the material. I looked at the things from two sides because the person wanted an opinion. I gave my opinion. And I think it helped the individual. This is actually, someone who was thinking about whether to go one way or the other. And sitting down and looking at it from my perspective, I was able to convince the individual that it was perhaps better to go this other route. And I think when we have colleagues who have this kind of trust of others, this fact finder, we are not saying that this fact finder is going to be with the bargaining unit member, right? They could talk the bargaining unit member out of this next step. It may save you. It may even save you a step. In fact, you may not have to go through a lot of hassle because the individual may look at this whole thing and say, okay, if somebody who doesn't belong to the administration is not going to be on my side, then something has been resolved here for me already. So even just from that perspective, you should probably want it.
As I look at what's been proposed, what I see isn't more data necessarily, but I do see another opinion another recommendation that's there. What we have found, I've been involved in some of this stuff for about 10 years, and the grievance reps for the UFF do a fabulous job of getting data and crafting very reasonable arguments in support of faculty who are aggrieved. I'm not saying that those arguments always carry the day, but I don't see how somebody that is occasionally brought in to do this is going to add anything, because they're not going to get any more information than the grievance rep did and initially, because the grievance reps do a great job. They make very clear, cogent arguments on behalf of the employees. Sometimes we agree with them, sometimes we do not, perhaps most times we do not. But I'm just trying to see how is bringing in another person going to give us better information.
You just said it. So and I'm glad to hear that our grievance chairs have, and I totally agree with you, that they've been doing a phenomenal job of preparing the case. They, of course, would not even take the case if they didn't think that it was worthy of pursuing, right? Because they would have convinced the individual that, look, this is not what we're going to take on. They've taken it, they've made their case, and now it is going to go to the president or his or her designee. And but before that, if somebody else comes in and takes a look, they may side with the grievance with the union. They may say that well, no, that you know, the step one official was not right, or they may say no, they were. It is another, you know, that it does add another layer of information, not information, but how another person would make a decision on this case before it is finally given to the president, because what it seems, you know, from our perspective, is most of the time it is basically step two will be a rubber stamping most of the time. And so, you know, you may even say, why even bother with step two? Let's just finish it at step one, which means that they got no due process. But you would be in the system here, there's no independent, somebody who's not been connected with the case takes a look at it with a fresh mind and says, okay, no, this is how I would look at it. So the fact finding, it's more like fact finding. It's more like giving an opinion based on the facts that are already there. Maybe fact finding is not the right word for it. Based on the opinion here, somebody else who reaches an opinion and says, this is what, given these facts, this is how I see it should have gone. Go ahead, Robert.
Chuck, if I can appeal to you on this, right? So instead of data, let's consider this as opinion, right? So it provides the final the final decision, which would be, I guess, either the provost or the president, right, or designee in this case.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them the opinion of an outside person. And for those of us, because I know, Chuck, you're not, Talat is not, and the provost is not, in the humanities, right? And so in the humanities, we do take great care in our construction of argument and opinion and stuff like this. More opinions matter, and I think to be provided with that last, and for that last step, that last person who makes the final decision, to be provided with an outside independent opinion that can only sharpen their argument, right? Because then they can say, look, it just so happens that this outside person I agree with, and I agree with for all these reasons, so it's giving more credence to my opinion in this decision. Or if they don't agree, they could say, look, I don't agree with the outside position because of all this. And what it does is it provides the grievant with the feeling that they were really heard, and that the process spoke to them, and that the person who makes the final decision really did listen, because they had to consider this outside opinion. So I don't think I think this adds a great deal to this process, and does it?
Chuck, I can't betray a lot of details here, but we went through very recently, and getting opinion from people outside of physics, outside of people who are looking at things from different perspectives, it did help, and it clarified things. And I think that's what we're saying. It's somebody who's, because when you're in a department, in a college, and so you're working along certain lines, you don't think about things another way. But taking somebody from another college, look at a matter, and it helped a lot in this case, and I think it would in other cases too. So we think that opinions, particularly of people who have had experience dealing with these, we are hopeful that the group that we select to do these things would be people who have had some experience advising others around campus, and so that's where we think it will be valuable, and certainly adds a lot of credibility to the process.
Well, I don't know that I'm sold on that, but I appreciate having the conversation about it. I think we're away from agreeing on this, and something that we had mentioned some time ago, I'd like to mention it again. To get to full book, which is something we want to do so that people get paid.
Mm-hmm.
What if we made Article 20 one of the ones that we reopen immediately? We've proposed something on 20 that we think is very reasonable. It doesn't add a new step to the grievance process, but it does include language that says if there's any change in the legislation, we're going to come back to the table. And we've kept the language in there. We've kept arbitration for any cases where we think it's applicable. But I can see, you've suggested some other things. You showed us something that Miami had done, and we saw something that Kansas State had done. This is at least a third thing that you've shared with us. And I understand that they all have merit and are worthy of discussion. I'm just having a hard time thinking that we're going to come to terms on this very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I just offer the possibility that I think we've put something out there for particularly 19 and 20 that are things that certainly recognize what the current legislative situation is, and leaves open the possibility that things could change there. We don't know that they will, but we want to leave that possibility open. I don't know whether it's worth it to everybody to keep this article open, talking about this additional step, which maybe we do something similar. I don't know, but I'm not getting the warm fuzzy that we're going to come to agreement on this quickly. I'm just being frank with you.
No, that's fine. I think, and 19 is connected to 20, and I think we'll take a look. Why don't you, we'll discuss it and see where we go with it. We are also.
But I think 19 is basically the same thing. Yeah. What we proposed in 20 is what we proposed in. Right. In 19.
Exactly.
So, Chuck, I'm sorry, Chuck, to be clear, though, the arguments we made today, you won't bring back to the provost to have a conversation?
I can share the things that have been shared today. I'm probably not as eloquent as you are, Robert.
I'll give you my schedule. I'm available.
But I understand the point. I understand
completely. Right.
Okay. Why don't we move on for now? Because we are also very interested in getting, to full book as soon as we can. And so why don't we go to, I think we have you have 22 and we have nine to present.
I can do 22 very, very quickly, I think.
Okay.
There were a couple of things like this further education that we had originally suggested be stricken. You'd like it restored. We can restore that.
Okay.
And that occurs both in the sabbatical section and the PDP section.
Uh-huh.
On line 123, there was an instance that you pointed out where we had put leave but hadn't put time off. We changed in 123 to make it look like what we did last time in 17. And we had just agreed on 17 that we were going to say leave slash time off. So we did that. And the same thing shows up. I don't know that you had pointed out to us, but we discovered it in line 252.
Okay.
The same kind of thing. And we went ahead and are proposing making that change. We have not moved at this point on the one semester for the PDP. It's been the experience at the university that the two semester PDPs are a particular hardship on the units when somebody's gone that long. You had asked us before, you know, is there any information about these two semester PDPs?
Yeah, how many people take it and where is it a hardship? Because I know that it's not a hardship when the lecturer is going from our department, for example, because in fact, it's easier to replace someone for 1 year than it is for a semester. So we would rather that they took in fact, it's the opposite. When they are taking it, we'd rather they took the full year rather than half.
Well, not everybody has that same experience.
So maybe if
finding replacements for people who are on PDPs. Let me just tell you that over the last 3 years, in 21, 22, there were 10 applications for the two semester. Five of those were awarded and people took them. There were 7 applications in 22-23. Three of those were awarded. And last year in 23-24, there were 3 applications and all 3 of those were awarded. So what we're talking about over the last 3 years is basically an average of about 4 people that do this. And perhaps the physics department is very lucky that it's able to find replacement instructors when necessary, but some units are saying they have a very difficult time doing it. And it's not just finding them, it's finding the resources to compensate them as well. And there's some in-unit employees that aren't like instructors and lecturers. There are in-unit employees that work in the library. There are in-unit employees that work in the counseling center and in the Center for Distributed Learning. It's not the same as replacing somebody in a course when one of those employees is out. And it has been expressed to us. I've certainly had Dean speak to me personally about the hardship that the PDP, and particularly the two semester PDP, causes for those units. And you know, I think this is something that we think is an important change in Article 22. And right now, based on the last 3 years, we're seeing fewer people asking for it, similar numbers of people being awarded, but it's a very, very small number of people. But the hardships associated with some of those are significant and have certainly been reported to us. So that's where we are in 22. We agree to some of the things that you pointed out. We appreciate those suggestions. We want to incorporate those in there. In section 22.2B, We're still at the same place.
Okay. Okay. So are you done with this, Chuck?
That's what we had to say about 22.
Okay. So, yeah, so we have, I know it's getting late, so I have Article 9, and I was going to share my screen. And do you see it?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So this part, in fact, this is all your changes, and it's all fine. I didn't do anything to it. So we go on. So we're moving on. I think you wanted to cross out the over here. So that's just editorial. And these are all still your changes. So basically, I haven't done anything. So the part where we have changed, so in other words, the major change here is basically referring to the individual as disputant rather than grievant. But then what we are, then I've highlighted these parts, and these should have been highlighted too. So basically what we are asking here is that we're making editorial changes. So the grievant goes to disputant, but we are asking that it be maintained, the status quo be maintained. In other words, the mediator part be maintained. And we did check with our grievance chair and others, and it was something that the bargaining unit members, as well as those who have dealt with these cases, felt that this was fine. It was working. The process was working. And so that's why we would essentially accept all your changes and otherwise status quo.
So if I were to summarize what you've proposed here is to take what we had offered as Article 9 and restoring everything regarding mediation.
Right. All right. That's it. I mean, so it's
I think just before you send it to me, Talat, can you change the header to be UFF02?
Oh,
so just so that it's not.
I have it. Oh, I didn't change. Okay, okay. I'm sorry. Okay, okay.
Are you sure this is number two, right? I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, you're right. I changed the file name, but I forgot to change.
Okay,
it.
That's fine. That's
I'll
fine.
Do that.
I don't want to be changing your documents.
No. I will do it. I'll do it before. Yeah.
Send no here. Worries. No I'll, worries. No,
that's good. I'll stop sharing because it's not anything major that we're doing there. So that's.
No, I understand.
I will take care of that and I'll make it UF02 and have the and that will be there. Okay. I think that's it for
okay so again I want to make sure that I'm understanding it, that it's basically our proposal and you're suggesting that mediation
mm-hmm.
Be restored.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. We will take a look at that.
Yeah, I'll send it to you right after I make that change. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I think, there is something that I did want to bring up, and I'm not sure that this is within our purview, although it could be somewhere. So an issue has come up, and it is probably going to go to Faculty Senate as well, and this has to do with the scheduling of classes. So what's apparently going on now is that the scheduler that the university is using is essentially making people go to various parts of campus to teach, whereas before it used to be that they had the first priority, you know, they were the priority to get to teach in the building in which their offices are, or in the case of physics, for example, we teach in the mathematical sciences building. So our courses first go there, and if it doesn't work out, then we go to business or wherever they send us. But apparently what is going on now is that colleagues are having to walk quite a, you know, when they're going between classes, there's not a lot of time. And also because if the proximity is not there, students also have a harder time finding the professor, whereas if they are in the building and that's where the classes are being held, they can easily walk with the professor over to their room, or they know where to find them and all that. So this is not a contract issue. And maybe there's some language that could be put in, but I just wanted to raise it. And I wanted to see if you could check on what's going on, because if it is possible to have classes right in the building in which the professors are, like we've had it all along, then it's better to do it that way. And given
and you're that, saying, you know, this is happening right now in the fall of 2024?
Apparently it's happening as of this semester, and that's causing confusion. So apparently there's a new program that's being used. Don't tell me it's Workday. I hope not. But
no, it's called Ad Astra.
I see.
Is what it's called.
I see.
So there are some things that are going to affect scheduling, but I'm shocked to hear that anybody's noticing anything.
Yeah. So if you could check into that, that would be.
Oh, great. I know. I'm on the committee.
Oh. Okay, Chuck. Then you must know it.
And there's a software called Ad Astra that's going to be used.
Can we get some of the problems to you?
Well, if there are problems, yeah, send them to me. I can share them with
because
my co-chair, the registrar, on that. But right now, really nothing has changed.
Okay, so maybe they're looking at for next semester. Maybe that's what's going on. Maybe there's a, you know, because there is apparently... there's enough concern that people have raised it and asked if we could put it in contract. And I don't see this as a, right now, as a contract issue.
No, scheduling is something that the university can do. So,
right. But the university wouldn't want to be having people running around campus when they could be teaching right next to where they are. I mean, I know exercise is good, but you know, when it's raining and,
No, but I'm real shocked to hear that anybody's noticing any difference.
Yeah,
this semester that seems surprising. Yeah. But yeah, if there are examples that can be shared with us, specific examples, not we heard from somebody that they might have to walk past one building to get to another or something like that. We need to know classes, departments, who the faculty are to really be able to look into it.
Uh huh. Yeah.
But I don't want to take time away from our bargaining session. That's really another.
No, that's matter. Fine. We can, I mean, it was brought up and we looked at it. We didn't think it fits within that, but we thought we'll raise it with you and that would be good. Okay.
And I do think that over the next year, that the whole business of scheduling is going to be talked about a lot at the university. So
good. Okay.
I think that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
All right. Anything else this afternoon?
I think that's it. What do you?
Talat, thank you to you and your team for meeting with us again. We're going to try to get something set up on Wednesday, the 18th,
so we
can talk about Article 10. Now, and what my understanding is that this is not an official bargaining session; it's a called meeting.
It's an official bargaining session.
Oh, so you want to bargain on Article 10?
Bargaining session. Because
right, just so we're clear,
we will be bringing to you Article 10.
Okay.
So just so that I is clear. So what I would do is on behalf of UFF, I will bring the part on PTR. Okay. And then we would look at the other part where, you know, what Charlie's saying is that she's taken things around here and there. And so my hope is that part we can go over and we can be in agreement, or if there are changes that we are not in agreement, we can talk about that. But then the PTR part, we will bring our proposal. We have yours and we'll bring a response to that. Does that sound okay?
Okay, we will see if we can get a bargaining session set up for Wednesday the 18th.
And it would be good to announce it.
We'll also be getting together again on the 25th.
Right. And we should announce it, soon.
That's right. We need to try to announce it later today. So
Right. Right.
that's why I'm going to get my team together and see when we're available. Hopefully, we'll have times when both sides can
That will be great
be
because
together.
that will bring us closer.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Excellent.
All right. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you
And
so much.
see you next week.
Thanks for coming.